Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. Well, time is running out to try to save the last house that Beat Generation writer Jack Kerouac ever lived in. It's in St. Petersburg. A local nonprofit wants to buy it and restore it, but the deal is not yet sealed. We'll talk with the nephew of Jack Kerouac's wife in just a moment. First, one listener call about yesterday's program. This person wanted to tell us something about COVID-19 testing.
Thomas over in Polk County. And my comment today is about COVID-19 testing. I just got done playing golf with my friend who's on the police force. And I asked him if he was tested or has been tested yet. And he has said no. And he's on the front line. So evidently, we're not doing as much as we should for testing. I just thought that I'd bring that to your attention.
That call came in after yesterday's program.
Anyway, I wrote the book because we're all gonna die. In the loneliness of my life, my father dead, my brother dead, my mother far away, my sister and my wife far away. Nothing here but my own tragic hands that once were guarded by a world, a sweet attention, that now are left to guide and disappear their own way into the common dark of all our death. Sleeping in me raw bed alone and stupid, with just this one pride and consolation. My heart broke in a general despair and opened up inwards to the Lord. I made a supplication in this dream. So in the last page of On the Road, I describe how the hero, Dean Moriarty's come to see me all the way from the West Coast just for a day or two. We've just been back and forth across the country several times in cars, and now our adventures are over. We're still great friends, but we have to go into later phases of our lives. So there he goes, Dean Moriarty, ragged in a moth-eaten overcoat he brought specially for the freezing temperatures of the East. Walking off alone, and last I saw him, he rounded the corner of 7th Avenue, eyes on the street ahead, and bent to it again. Gone. So, in America, when the sun goes down, and I sit on the old broken-down river pier watching the long, long skies over New Jersey, and sense all that raw land that rolls in one unbelievable huge bulge over to the West Coast, and all that road going, and all the people dreaming in the immensity of it, in Iowa, I know by now that children must be crying in the land where they let the children cry. And tonight the stars will be out. And don't you know that God is Pooh Bear? The evening star must be drooping and shedding her sparkler dims on the prairie, which is just before the coming of complete night that blesses the earth, darkens all the rivers, cups the peaks, and folds the final shore in. Nobody knows what's going to happen to anybody besides the forlorn rags of growing old. Think of Dean Moriarty, or even think of old Dean Moriarty, the father we never found. Think of Dean Moriarty, I think of Dean Moriarty.
As a beat writer, Jack Kerouac, reading from his novel On the Road, on the Steve Allen Show back in 1959. This coming Monday is the deadline for a local group to come up with enough money to buy the Kerouac House in St. Petersburg. The writer lived the last years of his life in the house on St. Petersburg's north side, along with his mother and his third wife, Stella. He died in St. Petersburg in 1969. Jack Kerouac was born in Lowell, Massachusetts, 98 years ago. He was famous for novels like On the Road and his stream of conscious writing. He chronicled members of the post-World War II generation who were restless, living a frenetic lifestyle and constantly in motion, taking frequent road trips. He was credited for being the premier chronicler of what became known as the Beat Generation. In January, John Shen Sampas, son of the On the Road author's late brother-in-law, agreed to sell the home on 10th Avenue North to a St. Petersburg-based nonprofit for $300,000. But that offer expires in a few days on June 1st. Here to give us the latest is John Shen Sampas, and he spoke with me yesterday. John Shen Sampas, welcome to WMNF. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Rob, for having me.
Are you the owner of the Kerouac House at this point?
Yes, I am.
Now, tell me how you came to own the Kerouac House.
So, Jack passed away in 1969. His wife and mother Stella and Gabrielle, inherited a house from Jack. Well, didn't inherit, basically just kept owning the house after he passed away. And when Gabrielle passed away, I think in 1974, I may be wrong here, my aunt Stella Sampas, or Stella Kerouac at the time, inherited the house completely. And when she passed away in 1990, she left the house to her surviving siblings, which actually include my dad, John Sampas. And through many iterations of, passing and inheriting, the house was eventually inherited by me when my dad passed away in 2017. So there, that's why I'm owning it, and that's how I got the house.
Now, this is the house where Jack Kerouac lived at the end of his life in St. Petersburg. Have you visited the house much?
When my dad was alive, I went down there many times to take care of the house. After he passed away, I've been there, I would say, like probably 3-4 times. Something like that, 3-4 times.
Now, a local group of people would like to turn it into an artist's retreat. What's the status of the negotiations between you and the local group right now?
Well, we actually already negotiated. We're not negotiating anymore. The group that I'm negotiating or negotiated with is called the Friends of, the Jack Kerouac House, nonprofit. I don't remember the exact name because there are several groups who try to compete for that. But the president is Patrick Barmore. We reached an agreement back in January that the group will purchase the house from me for $300,000, and I will get on the board of the group, and we will work together to turn the house into a site. Exactly what kind of site we were still discussing. Maybe a historical site, maybe a museum. It all depends on what the appetite is for the city. So far, right now, we're just executing this agreement.
And is this week the deadline for that agreement?
Yes. The reason why we put a deadline is, first of all, that we need to move forward, as fast as possible, because it has been going on for many, many years, on and off. We are really in the process just to get it done. And second of all, we are also trying to meet my personal deadline. I'm 35, 36, but I'm going to medical school in San Francisco, and I'm counting on the proceeds to finance my schooling for medicine. That's why we had a deadline for June 1st.
So, John, how would you describe right now the condition of the house? Because my understanding is that it's been decades since anybody lived there. What kind of shape is the house in right now?
Well, I wouldn't say it's been decades. When I visited there, I stayed there. I stayed in the house. We had water. We had, showers and everything. So it was fine. The condition of the house, it's a double-edged sword, right? I mean, it's in original condition, meaning that it's exactly the same way as was when Jack was there. But that also means it's not updated. So everything is old. And that makes it very unique, because all the other houses Jack has ever lived in have been changed or renovated or sold or completely obliterated. So it's a the condition, I would say, it's livable, but obviously that's not a goal for the group. It's not there to be lived in by anybody. It's really there to memorialize Jack Kerouac. So
Jack died in 1969. Was he using the house as a place to write? Did he write any of his works when he was at the house?
Yeah. He was writing, Vanity of a Deloitte. He was also communicating with a lot of fellow writers and his editors and everything. So, yeah.
And so if people were to walk in the house today, it looks pretty much like it did at Jack's death in 1969. And would they find his desk and his typewriter and all that kind of stuff there?
Well, we have furniture left there that Jack used, but the desks were moved to UMass Lowell for safekeeping because nobody was there. So the typewriter, it was recently auctioned out. But the group has secured the typewriter for display if they acquire the house. And also one of the desks will be returned to the house from UMass. And I've been negotiating with them for this arrangement.
Now, Jack's third wife, Stella, was your aunt. Did you ever hear any stories about Jack Kerouac? What was the family lore about Jack that you heard growing up?
Well, Jack was very much always in the family because he was a good friend of Sebastian Campos, my dad's one of my dad's elder siblings. And Jack was always hanging around. And he had an oversized influence on many of the family members. So, yeah.
An oversized influence? How so?
Well, later on, people would ask my dad, like, oh, Jack, right? And my dad would be like, yeah, of course. He came to my house, as a young man and I was a kid, blah, 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 So the story went on and on, and then people got very interested. And of course, my dad took over the estate, and turned the estate from something that was very much undervalued and underappreciated to something very much American iconic, I would say.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Jack Kerouac being one of the great American authors. What you're hoping for is that the local group or groups would come up with $300,000 to buy the house. The deadline is this week. Can you tell me if you're close? Have you heard that the group has met the amount of money that they need to raise?
Well, Rob, we are in this very special time, coronavirus and everything. So there is some sort of delay going on, I would say. The last time I talked to the group, they've raised substantial amounts already, and I'm not going to disclose more about the financial arrangement right now because it's still in the working. But I would say they are very committed to it, and so am I, and we're trying our best to get this done.
Now, I heard a rumor that the actor Johnny Depp somehow was given access to the home within the last 10 or 15 years and toured the home and actually scored a pair of Jack's jeans out of the house. Have you heard that rumor? Have you heard that story?
No. I never heard that before. No.
Okay. Well, let's just leave that as a rumor. So what do you hope happens to the Jack Kerouac house in St. Petersburg?
So, so my vision is this. I think it's a very special place in many people's hearts because Jack lived there. And, the most important thing is that, there is a mailbox and we used to get so many fans mail, in the box, just so many pieces of mail. It's unbelievable. I want to see the house to be used as a memorial site and as a historical site for Jack. And also I want to use the house as a writer's residence in the future for people who want to be inspired by Jack and that will be part of the scholarship and rewards that I'm working with several universities right now.
Where do you think Jack fits in terms of American writers of the 20th century? Where do you think he fits? What do you think his importance or his legacy is for literature in the U.S.?
Well, I think he's one of the greatest American writers in the 20th century. And I think he defines a generation. And in the meantime, I think he represents America. And for the generations to come, I think he will always talk to them.
He'll always reach people on some level.
Always, yeah, always. Because every generation, young generation, will read Kerouac and will understand the idea of freedom, the idea of, you know, seeking your own path. And that's very special. And that's very American.
And that ability to kind of translate that inner dialogue to paper is something pretty special, too.
Yeah, yes, yes. It's kind of amazing that someone could write it all down, and when you read it, you don't really feel it's in writing, but it's like someone talking to you directly.
Well, I hope I hope there is some success in preserving that house. It certainly is part of the literary treasure of Florida, and good luck in reaching that final agreement this week.
Thank you, Robert.
And John, thank you. Is there anything else that you'd like to point out and tell our audience about that I didn't ask you during the questions I had?
Oh, I just want to point out something that we've been trying to do some fundraising online, you know, through GoFundMe or I think GoFundMe, and some other venues. And I saw negative, you know, responses from people saying, what's the point doing that while people are suffering from, you know, coronavirus, COVID-19, people are really in trouble. Well, I feel that it's precisely the reason why we want to do that, because, you know, in a dire time like this, you know, we need some support. We need lots of, you know, literary, you know, backbone in America. And then the reason why I'm selling the house is because I really can't take care of it myself. I really don't have time. And I mentioned earlier, I'm in my 30s, but I decided to go to medical school because I feel that's the profession. That's the field I want to be in to help everybody. In the meantime, I'm so fortunate to be able to herald the Kerouac Estate. So it's really not about personal gain in any form here at all. And the truth is that the Florida house, you know, real estate's been going up a lot. And the house that I own really, you know, if I sell it in open market, I can probably get a lot more than 300. But I've already told the group that I've committed to it, and I will not change no matter how the market is doing. So I just want to reiterate my commitment to St. Pete and to Kerouac and to your fans.
And John, I forgot to ask, a few seconds ago you mentioned the universities that you're working with. Where are Jack's papers and his the kind of memorabilia from his life? Where are they stored? Which universities are you working with?
Well, Jack's stuff, the original stuff we're talking about, a lot of stuff, was actually originally sold to the New York Public Library, so the Burke Collection. But over the years, my dad kept every single photocopy of the original. And recently, I donated the entire archive to UMass Lowell. So UMass Lowell right now has the most comprehensive Kerouac materials in the world. And they are in the process of digitizing and archiving the entire archive. So very soon, scholars around the world will be able to access the material in one single location, and instead of going around to different libraries and different universities. In terms of the original stuff, they are mostly housed in your public library, but also some of them is housed in, I think, Emory and also UC Berkeley.
Oh, it's pretty widely dispersed. And the original version of On the Road, the original draft, where's that?
On the Road was written in the scroll version, and that was purchased by Jim Irsay, the owner of Indiana Coats, and he's been touring the scroll around the world.
With all the changes and all the corrections and additions and deletions?
Yes.
Well, John Shen Sampas, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF and telling us about the Kerouac House.
You're welcome, Rob.
John, thank you so much. Good luck in medical school.
Thank you very much, Rob. Thank you.
That's John Shen Sampas, who owns the Kerouac House in St. Petersburg. His father was the brother of Jack Kerouac's wife, Stella. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're joined now by Raina Espinoza, who is with the Suncoast Area Local 1228 of the American Postal Workers Union, and she joins us on the phone right now. And Raina, welcome to WMNF. How are you?
I'm doing well, Rob. Thank you for having me. And I also want to thank you for covering the issues with the post office throughout the year.
Yeah, we just had two members of the Letter Carriers Union on a few weeks ago. So tell me, you've got something planned. What's coming up?
Yes, we're putting together a Zoom call. It's that coalition between the Suncoast Area Local, the NALC of the Pinellas chapter, and the DSA people. What we want to do, we want to request funding in the next stimulus package. We want Congress to keep pushing the Senate to pass the HEROES Act. And we also want to ask to repeal the 2006 mandate.
How much money does the post office need to get through this period?
Well, we're asking for $25 billion.
And The things have gotten tight because the economy has slowed down and people are mailing fewer letters and packages. Some sectors of the economy are going well, like Amazon's booming, but the rest of the economy is kind of slowing down. So you need money to get through this period. How many workers are affected here in the Tampa Bay area? How many people work at the post office here in the Bay Area?
I don't have the exact numbers for that, but we are about 600,000 people.
Nationwide?
Nationwide, yes. And COVID-19 is creating a problem right now because, like most people and most companies are struggling. Yes, the mail volume is down, although the packaging business is up. But the problem is, like, with so many people unemployed, where we fear that by the end of the year, the business package is going to start going down.
If the economy keeps at a low level, the number of businesses mailing packages is going to go down at the end of the year.
Correct.
Yeah. During the first several bailout packages, did the post office get anything in those bailout packages that the Congress passed?
No. Nothing, zero. So we're hoping to get the help in this last package.
So you've got, there's kind of a thumb on the post office, and that thumb is the mandate that you talked about a moment ago. What is that mandate? What does that mandate force the post office to pay for?
Well, the 2006 mandate, it was a bipartisan act. They are asking us to save 75 years of retirement benefits for people who have not been born yet. So we are the only company in the country and probably the world that is being asked to put into savings account 75 years into the future of health and retirement benefits.
So every year you've got to put some extra money aside for workers who haven't even been born yet, who the post office might hire in 20 or 25 years to pay for their health and retirement benefits.
Yes, and so that has been carrying an economic struggle for us. It's difficult to carry on the day-to-day work. And now with COVID-19, it exacerbated the issue.
We're talking with Raina Espinoza of the Suncoast Local 1228 of the American Postal Workers Union. So, Raina, if you didn't have that mandate, would the post office be making money?
We will. We actually will be profiting. And we also be able to employ more people who will have health care and retirement benefits. So right now, when so many people are unemployed, if we got rid of that, we will be able to hire many people.
And Raina, is there still a need for the post office? We talk about this a lot, but let me ask you the question. Is the post office still needed?
Yes. Yes, it is. Actually, right now with COVID-19, it highlighted the reason why we are needed. There's a lot of people who could not leave their houses. We were mailing not only medical supplies, but also all kind of PPE. People started making masks, sending them to their family members, their friends, even the hospitals, care packages for people who could not leave their houses, which they're still being mailed. So also we connect the rural areas with the city, so we don't have that bridge that other countries have between the rural and the city area.
If the post office didn't exist, what would happen to companies like Amazon who are trying to deliver to rural areas? Or does Amazon have the ability without the post office to deliver all its packages?
I don't think so. Right now we have FedEx and UPS and Amazon. We help deliver the last mile packages because if it's too far out there, if it's not profitable, then they don't deliver packages.
So that last mile is key to people that live in rural areas and in places that Amazon or FedEx or UPS don't go to.
Correct, because if it doesn't make any money, enough money for them, then they don't have to do it.
So, Raina, what are you doing? What exactly is going on this week in terms of trying to get local members of Congress to include the post office in the next bailout package?
Okay, so today we have the Zoom call, which is the first local step to save the post office. We're going to get on Zoom. We're going to explain to people what the different struggles that we're going through and how we can help. And after that, we're going to regroup and see what's next. So we want Congress to keep pushing for the HEROES Act to include us and then to have the Senate pass and help us get through COVID-19.
Now, have you heard from local members of Congress? Has anybody said, yes, I'll go to bat for the post office, I'll fight for some money to help them get through this difficult period? Have any members of the Tampa Bay House delegation said anything to you?
No, I have not.
Yeah, so you haven't heard yet?
No, not yet, but hopefully after this effort, maybe they'll be contacting us, I hope.
And the Zoom call, is this for members of the postal workers unions, or who can get in on the Zoom call today?
Okay, it's open to the public. We have it posted on facebook.com/Suncoast Local. That is our Facebook page. If you don't have a Facebook page, then you can also go to the phone number to log in the event, 727-344-9573. And if there's any questions, they can always send me an email. And the email is suncoastlocal@gmail.com.
suncoastlocal@gmail.com. And what time is the Zoom call today?
Well, it's going to start at 6 and around 6:30-ish, people can start making phone calls to our representatives.
All right, so that's it starts at 6 o'clock today?
Yes, today at 6 p.m.
And if they want to, they can go to Suncoast Local on Facebook, or they can call 727-344-9573.
All right.
So, Raina, thanks a lot. Raina, do you talk to members of the public at all? Do you talk to the public and find out what they think of the post office?
People are very proud of the post office. The public, they want to help us. They always have. They care for us. They feel like they are part of the post office, that the post office is part of the country, and they would like to see us keep on going.
Well, Raina Espinoza, thanks a lot. Is there anything else you'd like to tell our audience before we say goodbye?
Yes, I just want to thank everybody for listening, and I hope that you support us in this effort. And I am glad to, be part of a joint effort to save the post office. So if you cannot make it to the Zoom call, there will be other local events where maybe people can participate.
And if this COVID pandemic continues through the fall and people are afraid of leaving their homes, we're going to need the post office to mail in our ballots.
Absolutely. We have always mailed ballots. There's when that happens, when elections are happening, we make sure that as many ballots get to where they need to go. And I'll be one voting by mail, because there's no reason for us to go and expose ourselves if the pandemic is up. And I hope that we are able to increase the amount of mail-in ballots to protect us all.
Well, Raina Espinoza, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
Thank you, Rob. You have a nice day.
You too. Thanks, Raina. Raina is the clerk craft director at Suncoast Area Local 1228. She's a member of the American Postal Workers Union. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. This is 88.5 FM. And we're going to open up the phone lines for the last part of today's program and see what's on your mind. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. There was community anger over the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota last night. It boiled over as protesters and officers clashed. Some protesters lobbed projectiles and police fired tear gas and, according to some witnesses, rubber bullets at the protesters. George Floyd died Monday after a Minneapolis police officer kneeled on his neck for about 8 minutes. Let's listen to a portion of a report from the CBS affiliate in Minneapolis.
Relax.
I can't breathe, my face. I can't breathe. Please, the
knee of my neck. Floyd was arrested around 8 p.m. for forgery, a nonviolent crime that implies he tried to use forged documents at a nearby deli. Officers say he resisted arrest before this person started filming. You can see him struggling, saying, "I can't breathe." Another officer faces the crowd the whole time. What you cannot see is what happens 4 minutes in. Floyd appears to go unconscious. The MPD officer holds his knee on him for another 4 minutes until he's pulled onto a stretcher, then taken to HCMC, where he died.
And that's a portion of a report from yesterday afternoon from the CBS affiliate in Minneapolis. Let's listen to a report from the Associated Press.
The protest started peacefully with speeches and a rally in the street where George Floyd died. Then protesters marched to the police precinct, with some damaging the building and a squad car. A line of police in riot gear eventually confronted them, firing tear gas and projectiles. Those canisters were kicked back at police. Some protesters retreated to a nearby Target and set up shopping carts as a blockade, with the confrontation eventually dying down. Meanwhile, the officer seen on video kneeling on Floyd's neck and three others were fired, and the FBI is investigating his death. I'm Julie Walker.
All right. So we could talk about any of these topics. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Earlier, we talked about the efforts to buy the Kerouac House in St. Petersburg and preserve it. And we're joined now by Jeff Shore of the Craftsman House in St. Petersburg. And he's also part of the group that's trying to buy the Kerouac House. And Jeff, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Great to be here.
So, Jeff, tell us, what's the name of your group, and are you the lead group trying to buy the house?
The name of the group is the Jack Kerouac House of St. Petersburg, and we are the group that has a contract, written contract, with John Shen Stampus to purchase the home.
So I mentioned during that interview with John that the deadline is June 1st. It's this coming Monday. Are you close to having enough money to buy the house?
Well, we're working on it. We have momentum. We recently received a $100,000 matching gift. So, you know, if we can match that, whether it's one person matching it or you know, numerous people adding up to match that, then we should be in a position to do it.
It's a heavy lift getting $300,000 for a local nonprofit. So how can people help out if they want to help out?
Well, there's a donation page online that'll give you more information and details. And that is truffulaeco.com. That's truffulaeco.com. And then you can just click on the Save the Kerouac House tab up top, and that'll bring you there.
And spell that again for us, if you don't mind.
Sure. It's as in Dr. Seuss's Truffula Trees from the Lorax. So it's truffulaeco.com.
Okay. And that's where people can find out more about your nonprofit. So what do you plan to do if you're successful in getting the $300,000 and you're able to buy the house from John? What do you plan to do with it?
Well, in a general sense, just further Jack's legacy. But you have to remember, it is in a quiet residential neighborhood, the house. So when we say we'd like to see a museum, it wouldn't be your typical museum that's open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's something where we'd have smaller, intimate event. We would have writer residencies and, you know, bring it back to, with like period furnishings, et cetera, bring it back to how it looked like when Jack lived there.
And have you been in the house recently, Jeff?
Yes. Yes, we have it. We figure as far as renovations, once we purchase the house, you know, we're probably looking at over $100,000 worth of renovations. But there's nothing really major. I mean, we're aware of everything. We've had it, you know, an inspector go in there, so we know what's ahead of us. It's just, you know, probably the worst time in history to ask for support from the community. But, you know, we just have to remember that this is for the community. And, you know, it's just another tool on the Petersburg Arts Crown and really for the whole region.
So are there any...
It'd be a shame to see it go the way of, you know, some developer getting it and demolishing it and, you know, building a huge house on the corner, which we're seeing in a lot of neighborhoods here.
Because as houses go, it's pretty run-of-the-mill. It's a pretty typical 50s, 60s house that has not been really worked on in years and years.
Right. I mean, we've done some work. Our group has done some work recently just as far as landscaping and things like that, just to more or less to show the neighbors that, hey, we're, you know, we plan on being good neighbors. But it's kind of like John referred to, it really is run-of-the-mill, but, you know, really what makes it special is, one, that Jack Kerouac lived there and spent the last years of his life there, and two, it really is somewhat of a time capsule of how it was when he died in 1969, 1970 era.
And from there, he made his famous walks to the Flamingo Bar on 9th Street.
Oh, yeah. He liked to play pool, among other activities.
Jeff, in addition to the website, can people call you if they're interested in helping out?
Sure. They can call Craftsman House Gallery at 727-323-2787. And, you know, there's only so much info we can put on a page. There's a Facebook page also, but But that's more or less for information. You know, we have a lot of support there and, you know, a lot of smaller donations. But as far as the big donations that we're looking for, or a bunch of the moderate donations we're looking for to get by June 1st, usually happening outside of Facebook.
All right. So if people want to help, they can go to the truffleeco.com website, or they can call you at 727-323-2787. Jeff, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
Thank you.
All right. Great. Thanks, Jeff. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. That's Jeff Shore from Craftsman House, part of the group, the nonprofit group that's trying to buy the Jack Kerouac house, the last place where the novelist lived until he died in 1969. Let's go to Doug in Clearwater, who's been holding for a while. Hey, Doug, you're on MNF. What's up?
Hey, Rob. I think you know I love your show. I love the station. I love it because you are community-oriented. I mean, no disrespect to Jack, but there's also a place in England that is going to go under. But what I digress. What I really wanted to say was, did they hang those four guys in Minneapolis yet, or the three guys in Georgia? That's all I got. Thank you.
All right, Doug, that's kind of weird, but thank you for your phone call. David writes this. They have not hung anybody in connection with the killings of the two African-Americans. There are going to be trials, I assume. David writes this. I want to encourage your listeners to check out John Oliver's recent deep dive on the post office. It's posted on YouTube, and it's worth a watch. Writes David. David telling us about a TV show. Thank you. 813-239-9663. Wendell writes this. I still respect the postal system. Was surprised, though, yesterday when I tried to mail two door keys from St. Petersburg to Daytona Beach in a plain, small, white letter envelope. I had a 55-cent forever stamp on the envelope. The postal clerk insisted that my letter was a package, and she charged me $3.85. Naturally, I protested, writes Wendell, that the letter weighed less than an ounce, but she still insisted that it was a package and that everyone should know the varying and seeming confusing price structure of the postal system. Wendell writes, higher prices are not going to improve my opinion of the postal system. I still say, though, that if you were going to go to FedEx or UPS and try to mail a letter, that letter would cost you more than $3.85, I think. What do you think? 813-239-9663. We can talk about these issues. We can talk about what's going on in Minneapolis. We can talk about the post office and the postal service. We can talk about the Jack Kerouac House. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Richard in Tampa. Hey, Richard, you're on MNF. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Rob?
Good. What would you like to say?
Well, I don't think I would trust our postal service to handle my my vote, especially this is a crucial vote coming up this election year for the possible change of the administration or the president. I mean, the postal service is very, very inefficient. I've encountered that. My wife's encountered that. You can walk into a lot of these places and you can look at the people at the customer service over at the special area looking for the supervisor to come out, and they say, well, where's my mail? This has been lost. This has been lost. I don't think I would trust them, especially for my vote. But talking about what's happened in Minnesota, I've watched two different clips of video. It looks like there's some video missing in the middle. They show him being led from his vehicle in handcuffs. And then if there was an altercation where he resisted when they were putting him in the car or something, you don't see that. But you do see the officer for, like, what they said, somewhere about 5 to 8 minutes with his knee on his neck, like on a chicken. And he's crushing the man's neck, his windpipe. The man was intoxicated. And even so, he couldn't breathe. He was pleading for his life. And police officers are here to protect and serve us. So it looks like this pattern has started again, where the police is out there just murdering at will black people. or not enforcing anything to protect us. So, I mean, how do you stand on that? How do we protect ourselves?
Well, I got to say, I haven't watched all the videos, but the pieces of video that I've seen over the last 12 or 15 hours are pretty shocking. Because clearly, as you said, the police officer is using what appears to be the full force of his body, the full weight of his body, to crush the man's neck and to hold the neck down on the pavement. Clearly, the guy, I mean, if this is a $20 infraction, I mean, clearly the guy was subdued and the police officer should have let him up. Now, if the CBS affiliate and so many other reports are saying 8 minutes, that this man, this victim, was subdued by the police officer by his boot, no human being should be treated that way. And very few human beings, I think, can survive that. So,
well, I don't think anybody could survive. I mean, you used to watch the old wrestlers, used to watch them stick their knees and their elbows and jump on top of them off the top rope. Come on, if I jumped off the top rope and I jumped into your chest with my knee or my elbow or anything like that, I mean, you would be probably dead or you would be paralyzed. So you can imagine that man laying on the ground, incapacitated as it was, already he had him subdued and he just wouldn't let up on him.
Yeah, well, Richard, you and I agree. I don't think that was the right thing to do, and thank you very much. Thanks for the call. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Barbara in Tampa. Hi, Barbara, you're on M&F. What's up?
Hello. I just want to give my support to the U.S. Postal Service. I think they do a fantastic job. I've never had a problem with them losing a letter or anything. I've mailed a greeting card or a check to someone. So
yeah, I was surprised Richard said that because I've had the same experience. I will mail a small thank you card that might measure 4x5, and it gets all the way across the country in a few days, and it cost me a few cents to do it. I think it's, and I'm with you. I've never had a problem with the post office, and I've been mailing things for, I don't want to say how long, but decades I've been mailing things.
And as far as the voting system, I mean, it's skewed already. So what's the difference? You go to a voting machine or you mail the ballot? I mean, I typically go to the polls, but I just signed up for mail voting, and I just don't trust the system at all right now with the current administration, but I don't see how the mail, would not be as efficient as any other way to vote.
Yeah, whereas, all right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Barbara. Thank you. There was a postal worker arrested just within the last week. He was arrested, and I believe this was in West Virginia, for changing the voting registration political parties of people. And it was a contract worker for the post office, I think in West Virginia. So we do hear stories from time to time about people messing with the system, but let's hope the postal inspectors and the people that are watchdogs catch these people before the problem gets really big. Let's go to Gary in Clearwater. Gary, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
I would like to say, first of all, I do trust the post office, but many times when I go to mail something, it's very expensive. During this coronavirus thing, there's an elderly lady at church. I got two 50-cent puzzles I wanted to mail to her. I went there yesterday. And for each puzzle, the mail to her, and she lives a couple miles from me, was $8.50 to send a 50-cent puzzle. I said, wait a minute, can you do it book rate? So it's cheaper? And they said, no, we don't do puzzles book rate or media weight. So I said, well, I'll drive there and give them to her then. $8.50 is ridiculous. So another thing, I looked up the starting wages of a postal carrier. Starting wages were $17 an hour. I have a college degree. I never made $17 an hour. Just out of high school, people make that much money. And as far as
pension, Gary, let me just ask you: when did you are you retired, Gary?
Yes.
How long ago did you retire?
Oh, about 10 years ago.
Yeah. So it's pretty evident that if most of your working life goes back to the 50s and 60s, yes. I can see that you probably didn't make $17 an hour. But I got to say, these days, if you have a house or if you have kids, $17 an hour is not that much. I don't think we should bemoan a postal worker who, you know, at the end of the week is making $600 or $700 a week. I don't think that that's a whole lot of money these days, given given our expenses. And so I wouldn't criticize post office post workers for making $17 an hour.
I'm not criticizing because a post office is a great thing, and under these circumstances, there's no way we should have voting waiting in lines. There should be mail-in voting differently.
All right, Gary. Thanks a lot. Thank you,
okay,
Gary.
Bye.
All right, good to hear from you. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Let's take some more phone calls, and we're going to go to Holly in Tampa. Hi, Holly. You're on MNF. What's up?
Hi. This is not related to the Postal Service. However, it is related to the video from Minneapolis, and I watched it several times. And what was incredibly disturbing, besides the incident in its totality, was that at some point, not only was the gentleman's his nose was bleeding, but he had clearly lost his bowels because there's a stream, a puddle, that you can see if you watch the video closely. And at that point, he goes limp. And officer, you know, of course, with his knee on his neck, would know that because the pressure was all released. And when I saw the release of his bowels, I knew he was dead. And people obviously are protesting for all the right reasons, but I wonder if that police officer also realizes that he has put his fellow officers across the country in a great deal of peril, because they're not all rogue. They're not all out there to, you know, make, I won't call it a bad decision. I think that's someone who should not have any use of force available to them at all, and probably should go to jail. But the cycle is such that after these incidences, and of course protests, that's the right that we have to protest such events until justice is served. But when I watched the whole thing and the gentleman just standing next to him, completely inured to what was taking place, as if every speck of humanity has left his body. And when then the other nuance that was so telling was when the responder showed up, they didn't attempt any CPR. They didn't attempt any life-saving measures on scene, which would be normal if they believed that the man had any pulse or any chance of surviving the event. Instead, they loaded him up and conveniently said that he died at the hospital, which is completely untrue. They knew he was dead at the scene, or they would have ensued with life-saving measures. So, my point in the call is that this is a tragedy all around, because it is a cycle. It's enraging and completely. It actually, my day yesterday was shot. I just felt so much compassion. This was a forgery in progress. I don't even know what a forgery in progress means.
Not clear what the crime was, yeah. Holly, thank you. Thank you. We're out of time, but thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You made some great points, and I'm glad you did. Lou writes this, hats off to the post office in zip code 33607 in West Tampa. I went in for stamps. The delays I saw there were due to customers' lack of knowledge rather than inefficient workers, writes Lou. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. Sarasota, and Lakeland. Ms. Julie's been our producer. Coming up in the next few seconds, we're going to hear the latest news from NPR. And then in the next hour, we're going to hear the Tom Hartman National Call-In Show. This is 88.5 FM WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg.